Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Thatcher.
Carolyn's here now. The flag salute will be led by Representative Carolyn Tomei.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony this morning will be presented by Representative Donna Nelson of McMinnville.
At the request of the speaker, I'd like to tell you the story about the most famous basketball player that ever lived. And I'm going to bet that there may be only one or two who will even know his name. Isn't that something? To hold records and records, and nobody know your name? Well, this individual is one of 11 children raised by his grandmother. He had a tremendous stuttering problem, so he just didn't talk. So all during grade school, high school, he just shot baskets. He put a piece of wire on his grandmother's house, and he would shoot baskets continuously. Well, as luck would have it, eventually someone found out how talented this man was, and he was hired to the Chicago Bulls. Isn't that an incredible story? However, nobody had ever talked to him. The press would ignore him because it took him 2 minutes to be able to respond to a question because he stuttered so badly. So ultimately, he was traded to Seattle. Unfortunately, in Seattle, he suffered an injury, took him off the team. His wife left him. He went home one day. Everything was gone. The note said, "I can't live with a man who can't talk." And there he was. To survive, he went to work for Nordstrom's, washing dishes. And one day, James Nordstrom happened to walk through that store, and he saw this tremendous man. He said, "What are you doing washing dishes?" By the time he was able to respond, Mr. Nordstrom had already promised, "You find a speech therapist, and I'll pay for it." That's the good news. And today, this great man, Bob Love, is back with the Chicago Bulls, and he spends every day talking to young people about how they can overcome. In line with this, my thought for the day is from Lou Holtz, my favorite coach, and in the huddle of the Arkansas Razorbacks, this is what they would all say before each game. "This is the beginning of a new day. God has given us this day to do as we may. We can waste it, or we can use it for good. What we do with today is important because we're exchanging a day of our lives for it. We want it to be good, not evil. Gain, not loss. Success, not failure. In that, we will not regret the price we've paid for it." Let's bow in prayer. Lord, we just thank you today for all of these individuals who are serving you and serving our people. We thank you for this day. We thank you for showing us the way. Amen.
Thank you very much, Representative Nelson. Courtesies. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to extend courtesies to two students from the Eugene area. They come to us from Kelly Middle School. Would they please stand? I'd like to introduce John Kammerer, who enjoys basketball, and I'm especially grateful to the representative for giving us the inspiring story this morning. John loves basketball and aspires to be a professional basketball player. And I'd also like to welcome Scott Clements, who enjoys basketball, PE, social studies, and science. He's on the school basketball team and the soccer team. And speaking of the science part, his career goal is to do something in sports or to be an astronaut. So welcome both to the Capitol. It's nice to have you here.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are four honorary pages from Pleasant Hill Middle School today. Would you please stand up? Danny Ortega Sterling, who likes football and track and is also involved in leadership. Danny, would you wave? Thank you. Kyle Bushman, also from Pleasant Hill Middle School, involved in leadership and likes all sports. Kyle, would you wave? Thank you. Jessica Walters, who's on student council and REACH. And Haley Shepherd, who is interested in student council and REACH. Thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate your coming and helping us out as honorary pages.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that. to the good representative from Springfield. There's actually one more student here from Pleasant Hill. He's actually hometown of Dexter, which stretches into my district down there. His name is Cosmo Cole. His parents are Edward Cole and Spirit Brooks. Cosmo loves football and baseball and enjoys being on the student council, so that might bode well for government someday. His career goal is to be an architect. And colleagues, I just might note that of these students that I met from Pleasant Hill this morning, when I visited with them, it's nice to meet a state representative. They were all more amazed that I actually built the Dairy Queen in Pleasant Hill, and that was more excitement than the representative title. Thank you.
Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my privilege to have 7 pages from Fernwood Middle School. I want to welcome Louisa Tonga, whose career goal is in the medical field, police or optometrist. I'm just really impressed with all of these pages. Jackson Morrison, whose parents I know, Kim Thomas, also from Fernwood Middle School. He wants to be a detective or a treasure hunter. Claire Regenstrife, whose mother and father I also know, or stepfather, Margaret Kirkpatrick and Earl Blumenauer. She wants to be a veterinarian, and father is Isaac Regenstrife. Emma Crabtree is also from Fernwood. Emma would like to be a veterinarian as well. Austin Wise, whose father I also know, Robert Wise, and would like to go to college and become a veterinarian. So we have a lot of veterinarians here. And also Kashi Tamang would like to be a doctor or scientist, and Peter Sullivan, who would like to be a concert pianist or a biochemist. Welcome to the Capitol.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it is with great pride and honor that I want to introduce a friend of mine. Jason, could you come up to the bar? Colleagues, this is Jason Van Morick. I've known Jason for about 2 years now. He and his wife attend the same church that my family and I attend, and which is a big church. But more specifically, we were assigned and have enjoyed each other's company in the same community group, and we've worked together once again for those last 2 weeks. I say it is my great honor to introduce Jason because Jason is in Salem right now, even though he lives in West Lynn. He's in Salem right now mobilizing with the National Guard. He leaves Monday for his second tour in Iraq. He's already spent a year there. That was a year and a half ago, and he's going back for another year, leaving his friends and his family, of course, here in Oregon. Colleagues, I would ask you to rise to this war veteran who's going back for his second tour, and I know you will all join me when we say God bless and Godspeed on this mission. Jason, thank you for being here today.
Representative Chip Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I have the pleasure of introducing one of my honorary pages. Nick, if you could please stand. Nick Stone. Nick, could you please stand? There you go. Nick is the child of Linda and Larry Stone. He's 14. He's in eighth grade at Fernwood Middle School. He likes to play tennis and rock climb. He belongs to the Falcon Badge Club. When he grows up, he wants to be an architect, lawyer, or a doctor, and his favorite band is U2. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For their courtesies, messages from the governor, messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president informing that the Senate has passed Senate Bill 5537, 107, 480, 700. House Bills 2119, 2275, 2520, 2633, 2973, 3043, 2090, 2133, 2138, 2176, 2264, 2300, adopted HCR 12. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president informing that he has signed SCR 14.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2626, relating to recycling of electronic devices, appropriated money, and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2626A. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I have permission to use a visual on the floor, please?
Representative Dingfelder asked for permission to use a visual aid. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you. Colleagues, our high-tech world brings us electronic products that make our lives more convenient and more productive. Every day, electronics manufacturers introduce amazing new products that we increasingly rely on for use in our day-to-day lives. But this rapid introduction of new electronic products means that older equipment becomes obsolete more quickly. Computers, monitors, and televisions now have exceedingly short lifespans. It's estimated that the average lifespan for a computer is less than 2 years, which means that one computer becomes obsolete for each new computer sold. The question then becomes, colleagues, what do we do with all of our used electronic products? Most Oregonians don't want to throw away their TVs and computers, otherwise known as e-waste, into the garbage. As a result, thousands of pieces of equipment end up being stockpiled in garages, attics, basements, or on my desk. According to the Department of Environmental Quality, in 2003, there were 7,500 tons of e-waste stored in people's homes throughout Oregon. Other Oregonians, lacking a convenient method for recycling or reusing their e-waste, throw these items in the trash, which has made e-waste the fastest-growing component of the municipal solid waste stream. This large volume of e-waste presents several problems. The first is a financial problem for local governments, which have to handle an increased amount of waste disposal due in large part to e-waste. The second is an environmental problem from the lead, mercury, and PCBs that are often contained in electronic items. And of particular concern are the cathode ray tubes, CRTs, in monitors and in televisions. CRTs contain some of the most toxic materials, such as lead, and exposure to lead can cause developmental impairments in children and can damage the nervous, blood, and reproductive systems in adults. With the mandatory conversion to high-density TV in the near future, the environmental problems associated with CRTs will explode as people try to dispose of their older televisions. A related and equally distressing problem is that almost 80% of so-called recycled e-waste is shipped overseas. Much of the e-waste that is exported overseas is incinerated, which releases heavy metals such as lead, cadmium, and mercury into the air. These toxins and heavy metals released into the atmosphere poison some of the poorest countries in the world, and Oregonians who are trying to act responsibly are left wondering where their recycled e-waste went and if it was actually disposed of properly. This bill, colleagues, House Bill 2626, addresses our e-waste problems. It promotes the reuse and recycling of e-waste in order to get these items out of our waste stream. It requires manufacturers to establish programs to recycle e-waste in an environmentally sound manner. With adoption of this bill, Oregonians will have access to a convenient and free e-waste recycling program that ensures that these products will be properly managed at the end of their life. And finally, House Bill 2626 furthers Oregon's recycling ethic that has become such an integral part of our identity. There are already five states, I think six, because I saw another one signed yesterday, with e-waste laws, and 22 others are considering similar legislation. The time is now for Oregon to once again be a leader and to pass our own e-waste legislation. House Bill 2626 is based on a manufacturer's responsibility model, meaning that manufacturers selling products in Oregon will be required to finance free, convenient, and environmentally sound recycling services throughout the state. The recycling services will include the collection, transportation, and processing of used electronics. Such key elements of the bill include covering TVs, personal computers, laptops, and monitors. Collection and recycling will be free to households, small businesses, small nonprofits, and anyone with seven items or less. There will be no fees, taxes, or costs to local governments or to the public. and recycling programs will take covered products of any brand in order to make recycling used electronic items as easy as buying these electronic products. A landfill ban will keep toxics out of our landfills and will allow valuable metals to be reused in other electronic items. These are just a few of the key elements of this e-waste legislation, and I will pass the baton to my co-carrier, the good representative from West Lynn, who will outline more details of House Bill 2626.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, just let me say how very honored I was to work in such a small way with Representative Dingfelder on this bill. It's as the good representative from Ontario, who's not here today, has said in the past, good legislation is not an event, it's a process. And the good representative from Northeast Portland and Maywood Park demonstrated years of thoughtfulness, creativity, and hard work, and the fruits of that labor are demonstrated in the broad coalition of business support that House Bill 2626 has received. So my hat is definitely off to her and her hard work and her intelligence with this. Colleagues, House Bill 2626 solves the problem already mentioned by the good representative by establishing a producer responsibility system for electronics recycling, a system that provides convenient and environmentally optimal recycling services across Oregon. While there are already a few collection points now in Oregon, they are primarily Willamette Valley-centered and non-uniform, and rural Oregonians have very limited, if any, options. House Bill 2626 broadens the current scope greatly by implementing comprehensive manufacturer-sponsoring recycling programs, or, if a given manufacturer chooses, a common program managed by the DEQ. These recycling programs, as has been stated, will cover the largest part of the current e-waste problem, namely computers, laptops, monitors, and televisions. And while we know this is good for the environment, we also have to ask the question, will this be good economically? Absolutely. In fact, it meets what I think should be the Oregon equation with environmentalism. Sound conservation policy based on free market principles that spur entrepreneurism and help promote and create new Oregon industries. House Bill 2626 meets this test hands down and will create jobs throughout Oregon, throughout the state, especially in the rural parts of the state where these types of services do not now exist. Colleagues, it's vital that we properly manage the waste and harmful toxins of electronic refuse. House Bill 2626 is the bottle bill of Oregon's electronic age, and it's one of our many obligations to posterity. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? Would that be the good representative from Northeast Portland or the good representative from West Lynn?
Northeast Portland, please.
From Northeast Portland. Do you yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For those of us new to the process, I was wondering if you could just take us through the path of this important bill. It started, I think, in your committee, the vote there, and then off to Ways and Means. Is that correct?
The path of this bill actually started over 5 years ago. It started with a task force of stakeholders to look at this issue. It was a year's worth of work and a report. Then we came back to the legislature last session with a proposal that did not pass, and then the stakeholders got together again and we developed this consensus bill that then came to my policy committee, the Energy and Environment Committee, then went to the Ways and Means Committee, the Joint Ways and Means Committee, and then came to here to the House floor. And it passed the Ways and Means Committee unanimously.
Excellent. Additional question?
Additional question of the carrier. Do you yield?
Yes.
She does.
That's extremely helpful to me. I'm specifically interested in the vote coming out of the policy committee. I'm sorry that I don't have it in front of me on its way to Ways and Means.
That vote was also unanimous.
Thank you very much. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this bill. I think it's a very important recycling measure. I was very pleased that my friend from West Lynn characterized it as the electronic, or something to that effect, bottle bill. And I think that this type of waste and planned obsolescence needs to be addressed, and in many ways this bill does that. And I also want to particularly compliment the carrier and the representative from Northeast Portland, because as is usually characterized by her committee and her work, it was given a full vetting in that committee with all members present on something as important environmentally as this bill, and all members were there and voted. And I think that's the way it should be when you're talking about landmark environmental legislation, and I want to compliment her hard work on that and urge everyone to support the bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier from Northeast Portland and Maywood Park.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
The carrier yields.
Good representative, I have a question prompted by one of the major employers in my district. Is the exemption described in Section 2, Subsection 4, Subsub B, generally intended to apply to FDA-approved medical devices used for diagnostic or monitoring purposes?
To the good representative from Hillsborough, the answer to your question is yes.
Thank you, good representative. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you. Esteemed colleagues and assembled guests, as a small business owner who has the privilege of working with some of the world's top high-tech companies in product design, I rise in support of House Bill 2626A. This measure embodies a growing ethic of environmental responsibility among American manufacturers generally and producers of electric and electronic equipment in particular. Enlightened manufacturers in the U.S. are now catching up to their European counterparts in adopting what's known as Extended Producer Responsibility, or EPR, policies. First coined in 1990 by a Swedish professor of environmental economics, the term EPR refers to the extension of the responsibility of producers for the environmental impacts of their products to the entire product life cycle, and especially for their take-back, recycling, and disposal. In practice, the term has been mostly used to describe producer responsibility post-consumer, that is, after products have been discarded at the end of their useful life. As such, EPR shifts the responsibility for discarded materials that would otherwise be managed by local government to private industry, thereby incorporating the costs of product disposal or recycling into product prices. First mandated in Germany in 1991, EPR policies are now spreading around the world. Many economists and environmentalists have stressed the need to internalize the externalities, that is, to incorporate environmental impacts into product prices as a method of attaining sustainability. This has been impeded by the difficulty of quantifying such impacts as the costs to society of air and water pollution. Although EPR policies, like the one before us, do not internalize all environmental externalities, they do internalize actual waste management costs into product prices. Accordingly, these policies represent an important step in the direction of sustainability. Although some have characterized this measure as an unfair mandate, EPR can be fairly described as a market-based approach. Once waste management costs are internalized, the market will determine the response. This measure, for instance, does not specify how products should be designed or what materials should be used. The aim is to send the right economic signals and then leave industry free to innovate. The bill simply ensures manufacturers build the post-consumer stage of their products into their bottom line. This gives a competitive advantage to less wasteful, more economically recyclable products and can provide an important economic incentive to drive product innovation toward more efficient resource use. A company that must pay to recycle its product has a strong incentive to design for recyclability or to provide alternatives like Dell Computer's obsolescence protection program that allows customers to trade in their computers every 2 years. When recycling is solely a taxpayer responsibility, most companies will not make sustainability a priority in product development. The United States is a major holdout in this regard among the world's industrialized countries with no federal EPR legislation or policy. This measure would go some length to change that. Finally, I'd be remiss if I did not commend the representatives from Northeast Portland and Maywood Park and West Lynn for the joint leadership on this critical issue. The bipartisan support for this bill reflects a shared interest in fulfilling the command of the Abrahamic God to let the waters teem with countless living creatures and let birds fly over the land across the vault of heaven. The passage of House Bill 2626A will make Oregon a national leader in addressing human and environmental health, inspire product innovation, and help create a standard for other states, if not the entire country, to follow. Please join me in voting yes for this landmark legislation.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also rise in support of House Bill 2626.
To the bill.
To the bill. 20 years ago, my father tried to dispose of our family's first ever computer. It was a Macintosh Plus with a single floppy disk drive, built-in black and white 9-inch screen. I came valiantly to that computer's rescue. This was not, I have to admit, out of any heightened sense of environmental awareness or responsibility, but because I assured my dad at the time that Macintosh Plus would someday be highly valuable as an antique. Well, fast forward 20 years to today, and in the process of moving last week, my parents uncovered that old Macintosh still sitting in the dusty basement where I had left it as an 11-year-old. And while my parents know now better than to trust my value as an appraiser, I rushed again to that Macintosh's defense with a new prediction that in a short time, a very short time, they would be able to take advantage of free, convenient electronics waste recycling, that it was sure that that little computer had a dignified and respectful burial. There are a few points I just want to think, I think are worth noting about House Bill 2626. One is that it was the product of a several years of work and then finally a work group that included representatives from industry, consumers, recyclers, and state government. And while the bill came close to achieving consensus from the entire group, it reflects a good deal of give and take from members of that work group, and that's the hallmark, I think, of the very best kind of legislation that we do in this building. Secondly, House Bill 2626 represents a 21st century solution to a very 21st century problem. This program, as you've heard, employs a system of producer responsibility where companies have an incentive to plan for the product's life cycle, making their products out of available recycled materials, using safer materials, making them last longer, making their components more easily upgradable, making them easier to disassemble and recycle. Thirdly, not enough has been said about this so far, I think, the reuse and recycling program that we envision in House Bill 2626 will use local infrastructure rather than reinventing the recycling wheel. So this helps create business opportunities for existing organizations such as Free Geek in Portland, Next Step in Eugene, and many, many others. Colleagues, this is, as you've heard, the bottle bill for our generation. Instead of roadside litter, we're dealing with basement e-waste. Like our predecessors did with the bottle bill, we're creating a framework for private industry to use innovation and creativity to help solve the problem of our times. I and the other four members of this chamber under the age of 35 urge you to vote yes for House Bill 2626.
Further discussion, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Well, most of what I wanted to talk about has been covered, so I'm just going to keep it brief. The nice thing about the citizen legislature is that we all have these other jobs and other lives, and as my friend from Hillsboro mentioned, he works with some of the greatest high-tech companies in the world. I'm a small business owner who has the privilege of working with some of the lowest tech users in the world when I'm out trying to fix their computers and explain why it is that this thing is actually not broken and doesn't need to go in the landfill. Now, there are two routes that these technology devices usually end up with. And as you heard here in the Valley, they'll end up in a recycling center, but not in all parts of Oregon. Before they do that, they either usually go to grandma, who gets given the computer by a user who wants a newer computer, and so they hand it off to the grandmother and say, hey, you can learn how to do email with me. Then grandmother usually calls a computer guy and comes out and gets her all set up. And then 2 years later, grandma's going to get the next computer when the end user gets bored and decides they want to upgrade to the newest thing, and they give grandma the new one. Then grandma asks the computer guy, hey, can you take this old one and get rid of it for me? Well, in the Valley, that ends up in the recycling centers, which is a free recycling service where you stick it in the bin. But in other places, I think it ends up in the garbage can or the landfill. That's what we're trying to resolve with this bill. The other thing, as Representative Cannon mentioned, is they end up in basements. I call them dungeons. The best thing about this bill for me has been between today and the two press conferences, I have taken 22 used computer carcasses out of my dungeon and are now ending up somewhere in a recycling center. You know, many of us think that if we just wait long enough, that 3.5-inch drive or that floppy is going to be needed again, and so we sit on these things endlessly. And making it more easy and more reasonable to find the places where these things can be taken and dropped off, which is exactly what this bill will do, will clear out countless dungeons around this state, and I can assure you that wives and mothers everywhere will be thanking you.
Further discussion, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to support House Bill 2626. First of all, because it's a to the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, because it's a good bill. Secondly, it's the kind of bill that when I go home at night and talk to my kids, they can understand why it's important. We had a great conversation about this last night, though I have to say I am too attached to my 1984 Apple Macintosh computer, which was given to me when I was in the fourth grade in 1984, to recycle it. However, the other pieces in our dungeon will be making their way to a recycling center. The other reason that this is an important bill is it represents the best that we can do with legislation. We've heard earlier in the discussion about how this is a bipartisan bill, but this also represents a great collaboration between our legislative leadership and industry. And I would really like here on the floor today to acknowledge industry's efforts to step up to the plate on this, to demonstrate leadership, and I would especially like to extend my gratitude to Hewlett-Packard, which is located in my legislative district, who has shown tremendous leadership on this issue, talking about manufacturer responsibility. So, colleagues, I urge you to vote in favor of House Bill 2626. This is a bill that we can all be proud of, and please thank our representatives from industry who have helped to make this bill so good. Thank you.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I was all prepared to vote for this bill today, but the debate has gone on so long that being the only member here that is over 75, I'm not sure I can remember enough of it to be able to cast an intelligent vote.
Seeing no one in the queue for further discussion, Representative Dingfelder, do you wish to close?
I do. Colleagues, I want to briefly sum up what this bill means for Oregon. House Bill 2626 will bring electronics recycling services to all parts of the state, including to the eastern part of the state, which is currently underserved. And House Bill 2626 offers manufacturers the flexibility of either offering their own recycling program or participating in a common program. This bill will also promote economic development by expanding existing local recycling programs and creating new opportunities in underserved areas of the state. In short, House Bill 2626 is good for Oregon's economy and it's good for Oregon's environment. Oregon has a history of being a recycling leader and a steward of the environment. In 1971, we were the first in the country with our landmark bottle bill. In 1983, we passed the Recycling Opportunity Act, which brought curbside recycling to most of Oregon. Today, colleagues, we can continue our commitment to recycling by passing House Bill 2626, and I urge your aye vote.
Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Lim, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Burley votes aye. Representative Crummell votes aye. House Bill 2626A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Let's see. Propositions and motions. Chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of Senate Bill 118 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Thursday, May 17, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the consideration of Senate Bill 1041 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Friday, May 18th, 2007 calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2002 relating to insurance and declaring emergency. House Bill 2112 relating to construction contractors. House Bill 2185 relating to public health. House Bill 2466 relating to photo radar. House Bill 2564 relating to measurement of water use and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2628 relating to lighting fixtures. House Bill 2760 relating to annexation and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2936 relating to motor vehicles. House Bill 2952 relating to financial reporting to prepaid managed care health service organization contract with the Department of Human Services. House Bill 2961 relating to domestic violence corporate money providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 3082 relating to registration fees for vehicles both by county. House Bill 3093 relating to long-term care facilities. House Bill 3186 relating to conversion condominiums. House Bill 3336 relating to death penalty and declaring emergency. House Bill 3395 relating to eligibility for unemployment insurance based on part-time or temporary work.
Bills for a second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill and summary.
House Bill 3100 relating to exemptions to requirements for corporations organized to provide health care services. Exempt certain health care practitioners from requirements of professional corporations organized to practice medicine or other aspects of health care.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3100A. Those opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cowan votes aye. Representative Berger. Representative Berger votes aye. Representative Barnhart votes aye. House Bill 3100A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
House Bill 3454 relating to tobacco provides that manufacturers of roll your own tobacco must make escrow payments in the same manner as manufacturers of cigarettes for purposes of providing source for payment of certain judgments and settlements on claims against manufacturer.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3454. Those opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bruin votes aye. Representative Beyer. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? She votes aye. House Bill 3454, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
Senate Bill 172 relating to property tax returns permits Department of Revenue or County Assessor to forward tax returns filed erroneously to correct entity.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 172A. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Shields. Representative Shields votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. Senate Bill 172A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that rules be suspended and that House Bill 3512 be taken from this morning's calendar and be placed in its proper place on this afternoon's calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 5013, related to financial administration of the Construction Contractor Board and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 5013A. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5013A is the budget bill for the Construction Contractors Board. The board regulates the profession of construction contracting through licensing and disciplinary programs. The board provides dispute resolution services, investigates complaints, and imposes fines for violations of Oregon laws, including failure to carry workers' compensation coverage. The agency is primarily funded with revenue generated from license fees. The Joint Ways and Means Committee approved an other funds budget of $15.1 million and 80 positions. The approved budget provides additional resources to expand enforcement and consumer education programs. The Joint Ways and Means Committee approved the creation of a new 15-person field investigation unit to reduce illegal activities, two positions, and an increased advertising budget to increase consumer awareness, which is expected to reduce consumer complaints and construction-related scams, and two limited-duration positions to provide job site mediation services and increase consumer assistance. The agency's performance measures were reviewed and approved with revised targets. Joint Ways and Means Committee recommends House Bill 5013A be approved as amended.
Further discussion, Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just rise to declare a potential conflict.
Please go ahead and state your potential conflict for the record.
I'm a licensed contractor in the state of Oregon.
Your potential conflict is duly recorded. Representative Thatcher.
I'd like to declare a potential conflict.
Please go ahead and state it for the record.
I have interest in a company that's registered with the CCB.
It's recorded for the record. Representative Bruin.
Rise to declare a potential conflict.
Please go ahead and state it.
I work for a contractor that's regulated by the CCB.
Duly recorded. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please go ahead and state it.
I am a stockholder in a company that has a contractor's board license.
It is recorded for the record. Representative Boone.
Same thing. I have to declare a potential conflict of interest. I'm a part owner in a construction company regulated by the board.
Your potential conflict is recorded. Further discussion? See none. Representative Jensen does not wish to close. Those opinion that House Bill 5013A should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 5013A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2094, relating to development accounts for individuals and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2094A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, colleagues. House Bill 2094 is the Individual Development Account, IDA, and it comes to you from the House Committee on Revenue, where it received unanimous support. This bill is a good bill. And as a result of an amendment, this is what the bill does. It updates the Internal Revenue Code reference to December 31st, 2006. It expands the use of individual development account funds to include the purchase of equipment, technology, or training needed to obtain or maintain employment or start up a business. It allows account holders to accrue up to $3,000 in matching deposits in any 12-month period. It removes the January 1st, 2008 effective date and adds an emergency clause. We received testimony from John Fletcher, Senior Policy Advisor for the Housing and Community Services, who supports the bill. The goal is to provide an incentive to low income to develop growth and establish a self-initiative type attitude. Urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. All have voted. House Bill 2094A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2171, relating to alcoholic beverages and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2171A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2171 deals with the direct shipment of wine to consumers. It comes to the floor on a unanimous vote from the House Business and Labor Committee. This legislation is a response to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling in 2005 that requires equal treatment of in-state and out-of-state wineries on matters relating to interstate commerce, including direct shipment of wine. For many years, Oregon has permitted in-state and out-of-state wineries, as well as retailers, to ship wine directly to consumers. However, our current law limits this privilege to wineries and retailers in states that have agreed to reciprocal tax treatment of wine shipments. In a 2005 ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court indicated the reciprocal state limitation is unconstitutional. Other reciprocal states, including California and Washington, have already enacted what is known as a permit state legislation. The idea is to allow wineries from all states, including Oregon, to gain the ability to ship to consumers in all states that allow direct shipment of wine. House Bill 2171 creates a wine direct shipment permit similar to what is in place in California and Washington and other states. A winery or a retailer will obtain a wine direct shipment permit from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission for a nominal $50 fee, then it will be eligible to ship wine directly to consumers in Oregon. HB 2171 was amended in committee to ensure OLCC retains its existing regulatory enforcement powers relating to direct shipment to wine to consumers. The measure was also amended to continue the direct shipment privileges of wineries, grower sales privilege licenses, and retailers subject to the existing two case per month limit to residents. Also, the direct shipment privilege was extended to trade associations consisting primarily of Oregon wineries or vineyard operations that hold a temporary sales license, but only for the period of time the temporary sales license is valid. Direct shipment of wine is a valuable distribution channel, especially for small and medium-sized wineries that produce low volumes of high-quality wine and are unable to place their products in grocery stores and restaurants. The amended version of House Bill 2171 was supported by the Oregon Wine Industry, the Wine Institute, and representing wineries from other states, and the OLCC. It's a good bill. It's good for Oregon wine, and it gets us back on the good side of the feds. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wish to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please go ahead and state your potential conflict.
I have a family member who is a OLCC distributor.
It's duly recorded for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close? She does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, for what purpose do you rise? Okay. And he votes aye. Great. Representative Shields, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2178, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2172, relating to diesel engines, appropriating money and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2172B. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask for permission to use a visual aid.
The carrier asks for unanimous consent to use a visual aid. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I'm excited to bring you House Bill 2172, the Clean Diesel Retrofit Bill. It comes to us after unanimous passage from both the Energy and Environment Committee and the Revenue Committee. I ask you to support Oregon's health, Oregon's efforts to combat global warming, and Oregon's economy by passing this key legislation. Diesel engines are awesome machines. They're powerful, reliable, economic, and durable. In fact, they move 94% of freight in the United States, and obviously very important to Oregon's economy. The trouble with diesel, of course, comes from the tailpipe, because diesel exhaust is considered a likely carcinogen by the EPA. Diesel engines emit an inordinate amount of fine particulates, which is a kind of carbon soot mix that's been linked to a number of significant public health and environmental problems, including asthma, cardiovascular disease, cancer, haze, global warming. In Oregon, diesel exhaust exceeds health benchmarks in 25 of our 36 counties, making it a primary air toxin. Rather than mandate a costly overhaul for newer, cleaner engines, the Department of Environmental Quality has brought forth an exciting approach in this bill. It offers incentives for diesel retrofits to reduce toxic emissions from existing engines and the risk they pose to public health. And in doing so, we'll get a jump on complying with more strict upcoming federal regulations and address the present danger these diesel particulates pose. The goal of clean diesel is attainable, and we should pass this good bill to start us on the path to better health and cleaner environment. The three important parts of this bill to consider. Part one establishes a goal. By 10 years, we want every Oregon county to meet and hopefully exceed the health targets put forth by the Environmental Quality Commission. This gives us a benchmark by which to measure the effectiveness of the clean diesel tax credit and up to its sunset. Also in part one is a special provision for aging school buses. Within 5 years, we intend to significantly reduce the dangerous risk of what might be called schoolyard smokers and what they pose to the thousands of school children they transport every day. Here are two examples from two school buses in my district. One shows a tailpipe with an exhaust filter, and the other does not. I'll let you decide which is which. Keep in mind that the children in the filtered bus are lucky. Kids breathe 50% more air per pound of body weight, and given that the air inside buses is up to 5 times more toxic than ambient air, school children are uniquely susceptible to diesel emissions. Part two of the bill establishes the Clean Diesel Fund. State funding will help Oregon compete for federal dollars available under the Diesel Emission Reduction Act, as well as help Oregon schools compete for federal grants to retrofit or replace older high-emitting school buses. Fund aims to give grants the highest and most cost-effective options to reduce the diesel particulates, the trucks and construction equipment that operate nearly exclusively in Oregon. And part three of the bill explains the clean diesel tax credit. While upgrading and replacing engines has a high net benefit for public health, clean diesel isn't as attractive as a business decision alone. 2172 establishes a tax credit to retrofit existing engines. The credit would pay down the incremental costs of those projects, giving an incentive of up to 50% of retrofit costs for diesel engines and 25% for non-highway engines. In total, the credits would not exceed $500,000 a year, and they sunset in 2017. Also, 2172 would extend the new engine tax credit enacted in 2003 that helps companies purchase new technology engines that are as clean as anything else that we have available. Colleagues, without our action, it will be at least 30 years until the fleet of older diesel engines would be replaced by cleaner and more technologically advanced diesel engines. We cannot stand idly by while these engines idle their toxic soot into our air. I ask for your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. In reading through the materials that we've gotten with the new and improved B version of this bill, there is a statement here from the Legislative Fiscal Office that shows expenditures of $153,689 in 07-09, but revenues to DEQ of $57,465, which is a revenue offset. Well, it's an expenditure of about $96,000. And it says, with relation to the governor's budget, that the creation of the Clean Diesel Engine Fund is anticipated by the governor's recommended budget. However, the program expenses detailed above are not. Can you help me understand why this bill did not go to Ways and Means to be looked at there as part of the overall DEQ budget?
Just a moment. Representative, I understand that the expenses are going to be considered as part of the DEQ budget.
Further question, Madam Speaker?
Additional question, does the carrier yield?
I'll yield to clarification, yes.
He does.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and Representative. So what we're going to do then is kind of go on a little bit of blind faith here that this will be included in the DEQ budget and the parameters of this bill will be covered within that budget. Is it going to require new resources or new positions that we're anticipating Ways and Means will approve?
Representative, I don't believe it does.
Thank you, Representative. To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I really like the ideas in the bill from a standpoint of what we're going to do and trying to reduce diesel emissions and that sort of thing. What I'm concerned about is the fact that we have about a $100,000 offset in 2007-2009 biennium, and then about a $110,000 increased expenditure in 09-11. I would also point out that it shows that the there's going to be a natural resource specialist 3 position that goes with this. So it'll be one position, but it'll be 0.88. FTE in the first biennium in 07-09, and then it'll be 1.0 FTE in 09-11, which means there's going to be some roll-up costs there. And I'm also anticipating that the reason why it's 0.88 for this biennium is because of the effective date of the bill. I'm very concerned that these bills don't go down to the Ways and Means and don't go through the Ways and Means process before they're coming back out to the floor. I don't think it's really giving us a clear look at what's going to happen, because, as I stated earlier, in this particular case, we got to come up with $100,000 somewhere. And if the agency is going to say that they can absorb that within their existing budget, then what I have a problem with on that is that it means that maybe they've been overfunded all this time. It just really bothers me that we're doing this. And I appreciate the fact that the governor's budget anticipates some things, but it's not the expenses of this particular bill that are covered. So I have some reservations about that. I would also like to point out that in our projected third readings list that I assume goes to the public, it shows this bill as being the bill having to do with the Department of Revenue. I think there's a minor error there, so I would just mention that to members. If you're relying on that, you might want to look at the bill instead. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A couple of points on this bill that are important. I'm going to repeat one of the things that the earlier speaker said. There's a very short bill summary in the projected third readings for this bill. It's inaccurate. It refers to something else. You'll find the correct one on your staff measure summary, which is much longer. So if you simply refer to the short one, go to the longer one on the staff measure summary in your bill folder to understand what this bill is about. A couple of other quick points. The expenditures that we're talking about in this bill are expected in the budget. Also, the Legislative Revenue Office and the Legislative Fiscal Office do talk to each other. They are aware of the changes that are taking place in bills as they move along, and these expenditures are accounted for in the budget conversation that is going on in the Ways and Means Committee as these budget expenditures are considered. The Ways and Means Committee, as you know, has several hundred bills to consider. We don't need to add unnecessarily to their workload. Finally, colleagues, this is a good bill. It dovetails very well with the national plan to reduce diesel emissions. This is a very, for those of us who live in the Willamette Valley, where there tend to be summertime inversions, a large percentage of the summertime haze that's not created by field burning comes from particulates that come out of the exhaust of diesel trucks. Very, very high percentage of it. And this bill will encourage those who are operating long-lasting diesel engines to do the retrofit necessary to reduce those emissions. I urge and I vote. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate the scrutiny that the representative from Wilsonville brings to these discussions, and I also appreciate the comments from the representative from Central Lane and Linn counties. This is an exciting bill, I think, because of the combination of approaches that it brings. The idea that we offer incentives and help industry. It also, I think, one thing I did not mention in my opening comments was the possibility for school districts to take advantage of the tax credit by selling them. That pass-through market is also an exciting tool for them. And again, I look at these pictures from my district and think about kids who are in school buses ingesting this noxious stuff, and the thousands of kids around Oregon who deal with that every day. They're captive audiences inside the school buses, and this is an important health topic for us to be addressing. I appreciate that we'll be able to be proactive on it and be able to address it very quickly. And with that, Madam Speaker, I would urge aye votes.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2172B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Hunt, for what purpose do you rise?
Request unanimous consent to return to courtesies.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Up in the rear gallery, where I cannot quite see them, there are a newly arrived group from Grace Christian School in my district. They have their teachers, Sharon Gann and Diane Crosby, and Jane Dormeyer is here as a parent, along with several students. Welcome to the Capitol.
Welcome to the Capitol. Enjoy your day here. Further courtesies? Clerk will read the next. Representative Flores, did you have a courtesy?
I do. Would request a suspension of the rules in order to...
We're already in courtesies. Please
thank
go
you.
Ahead.
Where is she? Okay. Madam Speaker, I'm just kind of fumbling for about how to go about to introduce and welcome to the chamber former State Representative Jane Loken.
Representative Flores extends courtesies to former State Representative Jane Loken, and the chair requests unanimous consent that privileges the House and floor be extended to State Representative Jane Loken. Without objection.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Capitol. Further courtesies? Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2179 relating to criminal records checks.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2179A. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2179A comes to the floor unanimously from the House Judiciary Committee. It enables the Department of Human Services to obtain a criminal background check when there is a report of child abuse or neglect in a particular home. Currently, the department must notify the residents of the home that a criminal background check is going to be done on them, which requires the people to go out and actually put themselves at risk. There was discussion in the committee that that we needed to at least notify them after the background check was made and amendments were made to do so. So this is a good bill to give our DHS people some great tools to help them as well as protect the citizens of our state. Good bill should pass. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 2179A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2397, relating to rollover contributions.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2397A. Representative Kump.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. All of us know that bills come to us in different manners in unique ways. I am honored and privileged to carry a bill that one of my opponents proposed to me. And so this comes to you in the name of Al Shannon to work with our PERS people about retirement options. House Bill 2397 comes from the House Business and Labor Committee, and it is drafted to provide PERS retirees another option to repay financial obligations. In spring of 2000, the PERS board made an error when they calculated interest on fixed accounts. They awarded 20% when it should have been much lower, 11%. The Supreme Court ruled that PERS employees must repay that calculated amount. Currently, PERS now allows retirees to pay their obligation in one of two ways. They can do an actuary calculation and reducing their monthly benefits over the span of the lifespan of the member, or making a lump sum of the total amount. Many of these amounts, their bill is due this year. In fact, I think it might be due as of June. House Bill 2397 provides for an option for retirees when they repay the lump sum back to PERS. Currently, that provision is not there, but what this will do is that people can take money from their funds from an individual retirement account, an IRA, or a fiduciary transfer from a tax-sheltered annuity, a TSA, a 403B account. This has not been the opportunity currently. Now PERS will be able to accept those funds in that manner. This is being written by counsel with federal legislation for the IRS, and so that when this bill is passed and signed into law, it would complement the federal IRS codes. Colleagues, I ask for your support on this bill. This allows people that have worked for our state over 30 years a good faith way to repay an amount that was inaccurate, and they need to pay it back, and this way they can do it at one time. And what this also is a win-win for the PERS board. They can take that money right away and reinvest it, where if it's done over the lifespan, the PERS member's lifespan, then that's happens, but not in the way it would with one lump sum. So thank you, and I ask for your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Kump, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Maurer, votes aye. Representative Scott, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2397A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2448, relating to medications that are intended to inhibit the enzyme known as cyclooxygenase number 2.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2448A. Representative Patty Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you House Bill 2448, which passed the House Judiciary Committee unanimously, and I want to thank them for all their hard work on this effort. This bill fixes a glitch in Oregon's law so that everyone can file a claim in court if they are injured by a defective product or by another party's negligence. House Bill 2448 establishes a four-year statute of limitations in product liability or negligence actions for injuries and six-year statute of limitations in actions for death based on the use of COX-2 inhibitors. You notice I didn't say the full range. This bill establishes the discovery rule, so the statute of limitations begins when the plaintiff discovers the causal relationship between the injury and the product. House Bill 2448 applies to causes of actions arising on or before January 1, 2007. This bill helps fix a problem that started in 2000 with the Gladhart decision. In the Gladhart decision, the Oregon Supreme Court interpreted Oregon's product liability statute to mean that a party had only 2 years to sue from the date of injury, even if he or she did not know what the cause of the injury was or who injured them. In 2003, the legislature amended the product liability law to restore the right to a jury trial. The new law applied only to persons injured by a product on or after January 1, 2004. At that time, no one knew about Vioxx and COX-2 drugs and the effects they would have on many innocent victims. The injurious effects of COX-2 drugs did not gain public attention until September of 2004, but had been on the market since 1999, which meant that some Oregonians could not file a claim, which brings us to the need for House Bill 2448. Colleagues, I have a constituent, Patty Rowan of Hood River, who came to testify before the House Judiciary Committee. She very admirably said what she needed to say, that she be allowed to make right the tragedy that happened to her husband and family. The law passed in the 2003 session did not allow her to do that because her husband's injuries occurred before January 1, 2004. House Bill 2448 does not take sides in the COX-2 battle. It says that Oregonians should not be deprived of a fundamental right to a jury trial if they had known about the cause of their injury until the statute of limitations expired. This bill places all Oregonians on the same playing field, those injured after January 1, 2004, and those injured before January 1, 2004. This is a good bill for Oregon. Please vote yes.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I also rise in support of House Bill 2448 today. As the representative from the beautiful Columbia River Gorge explained, this is a narrow bill that's designed to assure that a small group of injured people or the families of those who lost their lives get their day in court. A bit of chronology will help here. Vioxx came on the market in May of 1999 and was touted as a miracle drug, a safe pain reliever, especially for arthritis. On September 30th of 2004, citing an elevated risk of heart attack and stroke, the manufacturer announced a recall of Vioxx. There have been allegations, however, that Merck, the manufacturer, was aware of potential risks as early as 2001. Now, after the recall, people who were injured by Vioxx who lived outside of Oregon generally were able to bring claims. Because typically in this type of case, the statute of limitations runs from the date that they discovered or should have discovered their injury. But in Oregon, as the representative from the beautiful Columbia River Gorge explained, there was an anomaly in this area of law. There was a period of time when the Gladhart case was decided that the Oregon Supreme Court held that the statute of limitations would run from the time the plaintiff is injured without regard to when he or she discovered the injury. So that case held that people had to bring a claim within 2 years from the date of injury, even if they didn't know that they were injured or the cause of their injury. Now, some of you were here in 2003 when the legislature reinstated that discovery rule so that the statute of limitations once again was 2 years from the date the plaintiff discovered or should have discovered the injury. In that session, however, the legislature made the discovery rule applicable only to injuries that occurred on or after January 1st, 2004. Now, here's an important point. Keep in mind that during the 2000 legislature, Vioxx had not been recalled yet. The recall wasn't until September of 2004. So essentially what happened is that there was a group of people without a remedy. House Bill 2448 extends this discovery rule only to people whose claims were extinguished because they were injured or died after the Gladhart case but before the statute of limitations discovery provision was reinstated. And there was a testimony from a man named John Moulton from Eugene in the Judiciary Committee. Now, Mr. Moulton is only 45 years old. He teaches in the College of Business at Oregon State. In 1999, 10 weeks after filling his prescription for Vioxx, he suffered a heart attack. Now, keep in mind, he's only 45 right now. He had a heart attack. Now, he understands that the issues with COX-2 inhibitors have been slow to come to light. And in fact, Vioxx's potential involvement didn't even appear until 2004. That's when he made the connection between his heart attack and the medication he was taking. And Mr. Moulton explains, I can understand certain pro-business stances taken to create economic development in this state, but this issue is not one of those stances. Media coverage and preliminary investigations are uncovering a pattern of suppression and deceit by Merrick and others and are not business practices I want my state legislature to protect. I want my legislature to protect Oregonians from companies, and start in that direction is to let those people with an injury have their claims heard in court. And this is serious. Mr. Moulton explains, by having a heart attack so early in life, I am no longer able to secure reasonable life insurance. If I leave my job, I will not be able to get reasonable health insurance. The rest of my life has not only been medically impacted, but my ability to financially protect my family has been affected as well. And he closes by saying, we are all due our day in court. And colleagues, that's exactly what this bill does. It does not necessarily mean that these plaintiffs will prevail. They'll have to prove their case, and I'm sure that the companies will assert every available defense. But colleagues, this is a fair bill that will give these people who were injured their day in court. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I don't want to elaborate on the discussions that you've already had. I could repeat those and, simply waste some more of our time here. But I do ask for your support on this bill. This bill's had a little bit of a rocky road as it started down the path. And I would like to commend and give my thanks and appreciation to the House Judiciary Committee and the members there that worked hard to get it back after it had failed to come out of the Judiciary Committee originally. My appreciation for their hard work on it and my appreciation that it came out pretty much bipartisan, vote. My position on this bill is I have a friend, Cal Army is his name, who I hired from Mississippi Southern University some X number of years ago in the middle 1980s. I lost track of Cal when I retired from the community college, and a little bit later he left the community college there and went on to other things. 2 years ago, he showed up here in the building in a wheelchair and unable to support himself, unable to support his family. A pretty serious problems, a number of strokes and a number of heart attacks. This session, Cal was not able to come down to testify. Health conditions and financial conditions made that difficult and impossible for him. Now, I'm not making a pitch, or trying to say that this bill should provide these people with some compensation. The only thing that the bill does, and the only thing that I would be interested in, that it provides fairness to people. Some people could sue, some people could not sue in the state of Oregon for exactly the same problem. As has already been explained to you, the reasons for that, and I just think fairness is the issue. If it's sauce for the goose, it's sauce for the gander, and I urge your support on this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and to the bill.
To the bill.
I appreciate the carriers and those bringing this bill forward. And speaking of the rocky road this bill has had, last session it also had a rocky road, didn't quite make it to the floor. But I have a constituent, Peggy Duckworth, whose husband died from complications of a heart attack after using Vioxx. And I just hope she has her day in court to give her fairness and closure to the injustice. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Patty Smith, do you wish to close?
Very quickly, Madam Speaker. I just want to thank everyone who spoke on behalf of this bill. It is about fairness. It is about the right for a day for Oregonians. So I urge your support. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Dinkfelder, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Reed votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2448A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2476, relating to public body contracts for work and licensed building trades.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2476A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2476A from your Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed unanimously with a due pass recommendation. 2476A addresses licensure for contractors who win bids for building trades work for public agencies. Situations have occurred in which out-of-state contractors who performed such work were improperly licensed under Oregon's current standards, resulting in liability issues. House Bill 2476A ensures that properly licensed contractors are performing building trades work for public agencies by requiring that the primary contractor and all disclosed first-tier subcontractors must have their licensure and appropriate bonding verified by the public body before work can commence. If a public agency fails to verify the licensure and bonding requirements prior to the start of a contract, the Department of Consumer and Business Services is allowed to impose a civil penalty not exceeding $25,000. The A.M. Gross version is the result of a work group which included the League of Oregon Cities, City of Eugene, ODOT, National Electrical Contractors Association, Associated General Contractors, Special Districts, and the Building Codes Division. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in opposition to this bill at the request of my county, one of my counties, that's Linn County, who opposes this bill. If you look at lines 18 through 20 of this bill, the Department of Consumer Business Services may impose a civil penalty not exceeding $25,000 on a public body or a contracting agency that fails to ensure the licensure and appropriate bonding of a person under subsection 2 of this section. Colleagues, maybe in a normal time this would be an appropriate bill because we all have concerns about people not being licensed. But please remember the revenue streams for a lot of these counties is going to be severely hampered, and this might not be one of their priorities. Remember that counties are going to have to make choices as to putting serious criminals in jail, putting policemen on the road, or enforcing this. $25,000 on the counties this time through with the timber receipts the way they are, I would encourage you to vote no.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to also mention why I would think this is an inappropriate bill.
This is to the bill.
Why should the state legislature be telling public entities that they must do this or they're going to get fined? I mean, what is it that makes the state think that it is wiser than local government in making such decisions? It's just an unnecessary mandate. I don't think it's appropriate, and I'll be voting no. Thank you.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill?
Yeah, well, we have to ask our question. Do we want licensed contractors building structures in Oregon or not? And if we don't enforce the law, why do we have a licensure process? This is a common sense bill. Makes sense. We have to verify who's building what. It's a good bill. I urge your aye vote.
Representative Esquivel.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Yes, I agree with my colleague that this is a good bill. And it's real simple. It's like running a red light. Is there a fine for that? Yes. Well, is that your priority? It better be if you get caught, because you're going to get a fine. This is what this amounts to. You adhere to it. If it's not your priority, I can give you 25,000 reasons why it should be your priority. Thank you.
Representative Chris Edwards, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to reiterate that the counties and the cities were at the table when the amendments to the bill were worked out, and it is just simply a matter of following the law if you don't want to get fined.
Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Berger votes aye. House Bill 2476A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2537, relating to public transportation employers, and declared an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2537A. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2537A from your House Committee on Business and Labor. This is a simple bill which just adds employees of mass transit districts to the categories of employees who are prohibited from striking or honoring picket lines while on the job. And it might seem strange for me, a big advocate of organized labor, to be bringing you a bill that takes away people's ability to strike. But in fact, you may also be surprised to learn that this bill comes to you at the request of the union that represents those very employees, the bus drivers and transit employees. The reason that they are asking for this strike prohibition is that they believe, and I think many people do, that mass transit is an extremely vital public service, and that when the occasional strike happens where buses are out of commission, whether they're school buses or public transit of other kinds, that it's a major disruption on those that depend on the mass transit system to get around or to get to school or to get to work or medical appointments. So what the bill does is simply prohibits strikes by those employees and instead gives them the right to binding arbitration as a means of settling disputes that would otherwise go to a work stoppage. The bill comes to you with a unanimous vote from the Business and Labor Committee. It has, as I said before, the support of the Amalgamated Transit Union, and I think it's a simple bill that will promote public safety and ensure speedy settlement of labor disputes when they do arise. So I would urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close? She does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative David Edwards? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Votes aye. Representative Wisnett? Votes no. House Bill 2537A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2548, relating to reciprocating conveyors, and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2548A. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I introduced House Bill 2548 at the request of a constituent business, Pace Material Handling Company in Wilsonville. For the past 30 years, Pace has been in the business of selling and installing material handling equipment affectionately called VRLs, or Vertical Reciprocating Lifts. Madam Speaker, I request a use of a visual aid.
Representative Krummel requests unanimous consent for permission to use a visual aid. Is there objection? Seeing none, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. So on your desk, you got this nifty little letter, but on the back side of it, it shows you what a VRL, or vertical reciprocating lift, actually is. And so you can see that it's used for moving things on shelves or moving things from a floor to a balcony or moving things from anywhere in a warehouse kind of an operation. The key here, though, is that it's for moving things. It's not for moving people. So VRLs really are not elevators, and so they are exempt from the National Elevator Code, and they actually have their own code. These lifts and conveyors provide fast, efficient, and safe access from basements to balconies and other locations, whether it's indoors or out. And VRLs are material handling lifts that, as I mentioned, are only for materials. They are commonly accepted in all 50 states. And what we found is that Oregon is the only entity in the world that considers a VRL to be an actual elevator. Even though VRLs are not elevators, under Oregon law, they are still regulated by the Elevator Department of DCBS, and current law makes it impossible for Pace Material to hire new installers for VRLs. The 1999 Elevator Mechanic Law requires a person to enroll in a five-year elevator mechanic apprenticeship in order to qualify for a license to install VRLs. Since Pace Equipment is not in the elevator business, and they only install approximately five VRLs every year, it is economically impossible for them to put a new employee through a five-year elevator mechanic apprenticeship to get the VRL license, and that employee would never install an elevator. The result of this classification is that only licensed elevator mechanics are able to install or repair these devices in Oregon. In other states, industrial mechanics are used to install VRLs, and in Oregon, only 10 to 20 VRLs are purchased and installed each year statewide. As a consequence, it is much more expensive to install VRLs in Oregon than in any other state. In fact, the installation costs in Oregon run 2 to 3 times higher than in other states and actually exceed the cost of the VRL itself. A limited elevator mechanic license was established as part of the 1999 elevator mechanic law to help address the issue of VRL installation. However, only those licensed before October of 1999 to install VRLs are legally able to install them today. According to the industry, there is only one person licensed in Oregon today actively installing them, and this is creating a problem for affordable labor that is able to perform work on these devices. House Bill 2548 addresses this problem by creating a specific mechanical license for VRLs. The bill stipulates that with 3,000 hours of experience, or about 1.5 years, a mechanic may attain a license through DCBS to perform installations and repairs. House Bill 2548 also creates a restricted, limited mechanic license that would allow someone to perform 3,000 hours of work necessary to attain the full mechanical license. And this is important since VRL installation is not an apprenticeable trade. House Bill 2548 is the only viable way to increase the pool of mechanics that are able and certified to install VRLs affordably as in other states. It has no bearing whatsoever on the electrical component of VRL installation. VRL installation still continues to require licensed electricians to do that work. All interested parties support the bill. My constituents in the VRL industry work closely with the Building Codes Division and the building trades to bring you this consensus bill. I urge your support of House Bill 2548. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Shuffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Yeah, this is a familiar bill to you, Madam Speaker, probably, because we had this in 2003.
We had the bill in 2005, and our tenacious friend from Wilsonville has brought it back again this year because he has, I believe, the distributor lives in Wilsonville area. And we just, because of the decreasing availability of journeymen and licensed technicians to install this, they just couldn't fit their installation into our statute. And it's a good bill. I hope it goes to the Senate and passes so these folks can continue. We put a group of people together, including the manufacturers from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the building trades, the building codes department, and the representatives here in the state of the manufacturer, and found a way for these folks to continue to sell and install their product here in the state of Oregon, which is good for our economy and good for their business. And it's a good bill, I urge your vote. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I will.
He does.
Thank you. Just one quick question. I see that we only install about 10 or 20 of these a year in Oregon, and there's a 3,000 hour of work necessary to attain a license. Where are people going to get this 3,000 hours of experience?
One of the ways that they get their experience is by working at the plant where they build them, but also in working on them, because it's not just a matter of the installation itself, but it's also once they're installed, if there's mechanical problems with it, not electrical problems, but mechanical problems with it, then those guys would go out and, or those people I should say, would go out and work on it. So they're gaining experience whenever they're working on them. And in industry, they're actually, I mean, 10 to 20 a year are installed, but in industry currently there are a number of units statewide that are already installed.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Kremel, do you wish to close?
Not at this time.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Hunt, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Representative Esquivel, votes aye. House Bill 2548A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Colleagues, before I take a recess motion, are there any announcements? Representative Minnis.
Madam Speaker, I am delighted to tell the body that on Friday, the Minnis family grew with one more child. We have a brand new grandson, Owen Michael David Minnis, that was born at 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon, 6 pounds, 14 ounces, and 19 inches long. I'll tell you, it sure brings perspective. Thank you for sharing.
Congratulations, Representative. It's great to welcome another Minnis to the world. Further announcements? Representative Jensen, 4 p.m. this afternoon.
Madam Speaker, the House is being recessed until 4 p.m. this afternoon.
Representative Jensen moves that the House recess until 4 p.m. today. Without objection, the House is in recess.